it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, the Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Never talked to me about it. I believe everyone seen what happened. Don't get me wrong, it just happened. Like, I got pushed. I'm like, what? I thought I was like outside. I wasn't even thinking about me being out there on the field, but my apologies to that, whoever that was. I don't know who it was. My apologies to him. Like, just chill next time. Just, you know, you can talk trash and stuff, but keep your hand to yourself, man.
Lamar Jackson apologizes to the fan that he pushed in the stands. You saw it during the game on Sunday night. Fan reached over the railing to shove Jackson and DeAndre Hopkins in the middle of that game. He pushed the fan, and ProFootballTalk.com says that Jackson said he's not spoken to the league about any potential discipline, but he has spoken to GM Eric DaCosta. DaCosta has spoken to the league. And then Pro Football Talk says, reports here, the fan has been indefinitely banned from Highmark Stadium and all the league's other stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
So Lamar pushed back, and the fan got banned for, I don't know about fan for banned for life, but banned indefinitely. Which,
yeah,
my guess is they reviewed footage and thought that's the right decision. Because if Lamar had unprovoked pushed a fan that did not reach into the field of play,
that would be different.
I feel like there'd be a lot different story here. So, I mean, yeah. Without...
Or if he had like thrown punches or something rather than just shoving back, I think it would be different.
Yeah,
and it could have been way worse than it was.
Yeah, I without seeing exactly if the fan was injured or what happened, I know Sal talked about this a little bit. And when you're down there on the field level, really close, you know, maybe there's opportunities to reach out and high five players, or you know, fans can have the players jump into their seats. But when it comes to the opposing team, don't touch the other guys. Right. Don't touch your guys either, unless they cross the plane. Let's get a rules analyst on this. Did the player cross the plane of the fans? You know, just don't touch the players. Yeah. Like that's kind of easy.
Yep.
So banned indefinitely from Highmark Stadium and all the other league's stadiums.
Can't even go to a Texans game if you want.
No. 803-0550. So yesterday at Bills practice, McDermott put it this way. Concerned, whatever. He's motivated by what happened in that game against Baltimore. They don't have answers right now for Lamar and for Derrick Henry. And they can't prove that they have answers for Lamar and for Derrick Henry until they play them again. But they can prove their defense is not a complete wet tissue.
Mm-hmm.
They can prove that they don't give up 8 yards per carry. And they went full pads yesterday after a 60-minute game where Ed Oliver says, full pads on a Wednesday after a 60-minute game where we had to play all 60 minutes is a little challenging. It's trying mentally to get yourself back. You're still kind of hurting. You put on full pads, you go out there and you compete because that's who we are. So an intense practice to make sure that they kind of get it right.
Mm-hmm.
You were joking earlier in the week that the Syracuse coach was an idiot for having his players run sprints after a win.
Yeah,
I mean, McDermott's not doing that, but a full padded Wednesday practice – after a win,
yeah,
he's upset with the defense. Unacceptable performance from the defense.
You know, I guess we'll see how different they look, but no one expects them to be the Bengals defense, right?
No.
Like one of the worst in football?
No, I don't think so.
That is how they looked on Sunday, but We've talked about how that's a bad matchup for them, and it's Derrick Henry, and you know you're missing a couple of pieces. I don't think they're going to be like one of the worst defenses in football. I don't think they have the opponents to be one of the worst defenses in football, and that might be clouding this. Like my question would be, when do we feel like we'll actually know what they are defensively? When will we feel like we have a good grasp on that? Because the Jets, the Dolphins, the Saints, the Patriots, the Falcons, do I have to wait for the Chief game? How much can they do for people and their confidence in the next five games to say, no, that was an aberration, or that's what we are against Baltimore, and we got to get better against Baltimore? But you know, against the league, this is not what we are going to be. Or is it possible that they could be like one of the worst defenses in football? Because last year without the turnovers, they might have been that. How bad would they have been last year on defense if they didn't get turnovers?
They're pretty bad. I mean, especially on third down. I mean, the rankings were in the 30s.
And horrible.
Anytime you're ranked in the 30s on anything,
right,
that's horrible.
So like this year, I guess what I'm asking is, if they are close to the same as what they were on defense last year, but they don't get their turnovers,
and then they're in trouble.
How bad is that?
That's pretty bad.
Is that Bengals bad? Is that bottom 10 bad? Is that bottom 3 bad? Like, it could be really bad, I think.
It could be really good for Josh Allen's statistics.
I mean, it's a great start for his MVP candidacy, 394.
Put up 5,000 yards and 50 total touchdowns if the defense is that bad.
I said before the season, I thought there was no earthly chance that Josh Allen could win MVP for a second year in a row. But if their defense is cooked and he's got to throw for 300 yards every week, a la Burrow, but the Bills make the playoffs and win their division and are like the one seed, then he'll win MVP for a second year in a row. No doubt about it. I don't think they want to be that. I don't know that they'll play offense in a way that exposes that defense. That's one thing that some teams, this is Cincinnati, I'm trying to think of other, Dallas maybe is a little bit like this too, but what do you do when you don't trust your defense? How do you play offense? Because the Bills over time have acted like, oh, we'll slow play things and we'll run the ball and we'll burn the clock. What does Cincinnati do? They don't trust their defense, and what do? Air it out. Score 40. And they don't make the playoffs doing that way. If the Bills have a defense that bad, how will they do it? Because I don't think Allen gets the 5,000 yards. I think they probably run the ball a lot to protect their defense.
Maybe. Don't you feel like they're more likely to go into a game like this saying, let's get out in front because we want to... It's different. Baltimore is more pick your poison, right? We say that a lot. The Jets, the Bills are going to want to make them one-dimensional. They're going to want to make them... Let's get Fields to drop back. If he only has to drop back 20 times in this game, it's a problem. We want him dropping back 40 times. And the way to get him to drop back 40 times is to score on your first couple possessions, not slow play it, get out in front, make the Jets feel like they have to get away from Breece Hall.
And, I was going to say, even slow him down a little bit. Breece Hall, if you look at his career, some of these are tough because he's played the Bills more than everybody else, but in four games against the Bills, he has 48 carries for 308 yards, averaging 6.4 yards per carry. Add in another 134 yards and a touchdown through the air. Of teams he's played multiple times, he's played the Bills about as well as any other team. 6.5 yards per carry. So, you're going to want to keep that to around 4, I think, on top of the score effect of it. So it is a good test to see what they are. Was that just Derrick Henry? Because here's another running back that you've struggled with a lot in his career. There were games where I remember coming in injured and would break off a 50-yard run against the Bills. Big explosive plays. And if they're able to keep him in check, maybe we won't feel great about the whole defense for the playoffs and think like, oh, they stopped the Jets, so I feel good. But if the run defense shows up on Sunday, then okay, that might be like one component of the defense that will feel good.
803-0550. Chris and Engel is going to lead us off here. We'll talk about this defense and what they can do to kind of show us they're not this bad. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good.
So I think if you look at our offense, and you break it down, I mean, obviously, you could arguably say we have the best quarterback in the whole entire NFL. We have an excellent offensive line. We have good receivers, good running backs, and that's on the offense. If you switch it around to the defense, it's hard to say because how good are they? I know Ed Oliver had an excellent game. I mean, you've got guys like, you know, Russo, who can flash time to time, and then you got Bosa, who we'll see what happens. I mean, he did some good things, but, you know, Bernard and Milano, our safety room, you know, we got, our stud corner and Teron Johnson. So I don't know if defensively they got to work as a cohesive unit, because I don't know if we have the talent on defense. I could be wrong. I mean, it's one game, but I don't know. I don't know if I'm making sense.
No, you are, Chris. Mm-hmm. What I would say is I remember going way, way back. And looking back, this might not have been correct, but way back in the heat of the drought, one thing I used to say was, don't let the New England Patriots give you a full-on identity crisis. And what I meant by that was, you know, here are who the Bills are. They might be respectably good. New England comes in and whomps them 31-3.
Like, yeah.
Okay, that's a different standard. That's not exactly a peer. They're a cut above. And we might want to start doing that with this defense and Baltimore, where... whether it was Joe Marino with us yesterday, I saw John Fina talking about this as well, that the way the Bills are built, they are definitely not built to stop Baltimore. They are built to stop teams that pass it a lot, and they invite the run. And Baltimore is a unique monster of a team that says, oh, we would love to.
Mm-hmm.
And if you invite us to run, we will run right through your face. So that's where the problem comes in. Baltimore didn't even have two of their biggest pieces in the run game in Ricard and Likely. And still, the Bills were getting absolutely shredded in the passing game, or in the running game, and the passing game for that matter. So there's an element of it that says, okay, I know that's troubled. Does that mean I have a full-on identity crisis where no one on my defense is good? Or, which is not what you said, Chris. Like, Oliver played great in this game while they gave up 8 yards per carry, right? Like, that doesn't happen. So... Mm-hmm. It's why this next game might be a perfect test for if they rein in it a little bit. And then the following week, it's Miami. And Miami is not a team you're going to be too worried about running the ball on you. And then it's the Saints. And then it's the Patriots. And now we're kind of back to, all right, regular teams. And let's see how the Bills' defense looks against these regular teams. Now,
because if they struggle against the regular teams, then that's going to not feel great.
If anybody can do whatever they want against this team, which was a little bit of last year. Last year, they got worked.
Yeah.
In multiple games. And they...
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Turn it over. 803-0550, 1-888-552-550. That Baltimore problem is going to be, it's going to come back later. But, you know, not for a couple months. You can join us, Jeremy and Joe on WGR. We've got Sal at 8. I've got an incredible instant trivia and fun game to work off of on that. Of course, the Jets had the longest playoff drought in North American sports.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else identify with that? Kind of close to that? I have a couple questions about that. Maybe we'll do that next. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
Jackson under center. Going to hand it off to Henry. And he's bottled up. The ball is out. It's loose. Who's got the football? It's Buffalo ball. At the Baltimore 30-yard line. Terrell Bernard. Player of the game is presented by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield. Highmark is the official health plan of the Buffalo Bills because life. And while Terrell Bernard came up with the fumble recovery, your player of the game is Ed Oliver, the man who forced the fumble on Derrick Henry at a critical juncture of the game in the fourth quarter. He also had 6 tackles, 3 of which went for loss. The sack in the first half that forced the Ravens to take a field goal on an opening drive or on an early drive. And it's presented by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield. So, heck of an effort by Ed Oliver, the best defensive player on the field for the Bills last night. And we hope to see more of that on a week-by-week basis. No doubter.
Yeah.
So, congrats to him. He is our player of the game. We are going to take your phone calls at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, but we do have to zip around the NFL first, presented by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. And as we told you, the AFC East all dropped their season openers with the exception of the Bills. Miami loses in embarrassing fashion, as my prediction that the Dolphins will implode this season is off to a good start. They lose 33-8 to the Colts. Jets played well, as we said, particularly on offense. Drops a 34-32 decision to former quarterback Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers. Rodgers with four TD passes. Garrett Wilson also got jacked up on the last play of that game by Jalen Ramsey. So we'll have to check and see if Wilson has a rib injury or something else later this week, knowing the Bills are headed to New Jersey this coming weekend. And the Patriots drop a 2013 decision at home to the Raiders. Drake May had a tough day. His protection was suspect at best. Geno Smith, 362 passing yards to May's 287. So New England moved the ball. They just couldn't finish drives. 1-for-3 in the red zone.
Right.
Interesting news, being the flames being stoked by the New York media after the Giants lost to the Commanders. Giants coach Brian Daboll was asked after Sunday's 21-6 loss to Washington if it was fair to say that quarterback Russell Wilson will be the team's starter next week against division rival Dallas. His answers were less than definitive after the game, knowing that Jackson Dart, the rookie, is the backup quarterback. But Daboll said, quote, "We're going to get home and look at our game," when asked if he would consider starting Jackson Dart next week. Then he said, "We're just right here after the game. I've got confidence. We have to do better around overall, coaches, players, all around everybody. So we'll get focused and ready to go on to Dallas." Wilson, 17 of 13 passing for 168 yards, no touchdowns or interceptions, ineffective under pressure, and that's where you get Russell Wilson because he's 5'11". He can't throw to the middle of the field.
Yeah, he's also, at this point of his career, he's taking his eyes off the downfield. His eyes drop when he's getting pressure, and you can't. He stops looking down the field.
Yeah.
And he's not an athlete enough at this point of his career to escape as he once did. It's a struggle. You knew it would be. They're going to have to protect him better and give him better options, some more easy throws, some more easier completions. For a minute in this game, the Giants looked, I'm going to say, good.
Yeah.
They look competitive. They were hanging on.
Their defense is good. They have a nice pass rush.
They look competitive.
Their
O-line like they were well coached.
The O-line's the problem.
But then as the game wore on, Washington started to find some things that they could do against the Giants on both sides of the ball. And the Giants couldn't adjust, didn't have the
And the Giants are still without their starting left tackle, Andrew Thomas, who missed the whole preseason, still out with injury. Their O-line is the big problem there.
The Giants don't have they don't have a quarterback in Russ Wilson who can put a cape on or make some plays that will overcome some challenges and put pressure back on the other side of the ball.
He's limited.
And it showed. And a team like Washington just outdistanced the Giants.
And finally, tonight on Monday Night Football, it's the debut of Ben Johnson as head coach of the Chicago Bears as they face the Minnesota Vikings and their debut of first-year starting quarterback J.J. McCarthy. I'm really interested to see how that game plays out. That's an interesting one for sure. Yeah, but let's get to the phone calls.
I just hope I can stay awake.
I'm dragging a little bit,
man. It was a late night, and you get home, and were you wired? I mean, you got to be. You're wired after the game, right? Because the broadcast.
Right, but I kind of mellowed out on the drive home because I was still in traffic at that late hour, and it took me about a little over an hour and 10 minutes to get home on what is usually a 20-minute drive. So you kind of mellow out on the drive back in the pitch dark.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we'll get through it. No worries.
Yeah, we had the post game live, and by the time I got
I
skidded out of here quick, got right home, and I was still just jacked. I had no shot at going.
Yeah.
I went on the NFL Plus.
And watched it again?
And watched the fourth quarter again.
You have a problem.
That might be a goner.
You do have a problem.
It might be a goner. They the condensed game wasn't up yet.
No, it's too
usually close
not.
It was too close to the game. Yeah. So I watched, and I just fast forward. I was...
Okay.
It took me... you're going to... Yeah, I'm going to show symptoms of a sleepless night, I'm sure, at some point.
Let's get to the phones. We've got a lot of people waiting at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, and we lead off with Cindy in Niagara Falls. What's up, Cindy?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First of all, who the hell could sleep after that game? Oh, my God, it was so exciting. And a couple things. My husband's been reading online that Harbaugh is saying that the refs were biased for us. And I think that is so, so far from the truth. That one play that Coleman got pushed out of the end zone and went out of bounds for a minute and then came back in, shouldn't that have been an interference call?
You could have called that or defensive holding on just about every two-point conversion attempt.
Yeah, both teams could have a beef, though. From their perspective, Dalton Kincaid's behind didn't touch out of bounds until the clock was at double zeros.
Right. I agree.
So they got all the of that, call there.
So that's a three-point difference in a two-point game.
Or a one-point game.
So there's a lot of that in it. And I'm sure – and, hey, Bills fans, we do the same thing in a game like this. But
absolutely.
Every play, when you get into a one-point game and you're both scoring over 40 points, you can go back. You can go back as far as you want. And both teams could pluck out referees' calls.
Right. And the second thing, when Josh slid for that important first down, why didn't McDermott throw the challenge flag, or why didn't they replay it?
Yeah,
okay,
the slide.
I'm gonna let you go.
Yep,
yeah, Josh slid for a first down, and he slid because he thought he had it. I'm with you. That should have been reviewed and spotted properly. Even the official in the booth.
Sky judge, but from what I understand, they mark you at the beginning of the slide. As soon as you give yourself up, that's where they mark you. It's not where you hit the ground or any of that.
Yeah, I don't.
That's what they say.
It's not a slide until he hits the ground. Because think about the Pittsburgh touchdown run where you kind of let up.
I wasn't happy with the spot.
That spot was horrible. I would agree with you. And you're right. I think Keon did get pushed out of the back of the end zone and then reestablished.
Challenging spots is kind of a tricky business because you very rarely get it overturned. Rarely. It does happen, but not often.
That would have gotten overturned.
You think?
Absolutely.
Okay. I don't share the same confidence.
Because here's the thing, too. They were, if you remember, it was kind of a helter-skelter point in the game where they were kind of going fast.
Well, they just got back up on the ball and got it anyway.
Yeah.
But
no, they didn't.
Oh, they didn't get it?
They did not, because we got a false start penalty.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
We didn't get it. We ended up having to – we punted it away.
Yeah.
So it was a crucial first down, and it did change the tenor of that moment of the game, and who knows what would have happened going forward. But that was.
I just know that Coach McDermott, when he has challenge spots, has not gotten the benefit of the officiating overturning it.
Yeah, and it's easy to sit here now that we won by 1 point instead of lost by 1 point or lost by 2 points, to say, no, the officials were fine. They weren't fine.
No.
They had a couple of things that I was like.
There was one point
and it was on both sides.
There was one point where there was a touchback in the end zone and the refs put it at the 30. And it's supposed to be at 35 this year. And one of the players had to say, hey, we're supposed to get that. Yeah. It was for the Ravens.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we're supposed to get that to 35, right? Oh, yeah, that's right. That's the officials doing that.
Right.
Let's go to Alex in Charlotte next. Let me punch him up here. What's up, Alex?
Hey, guys. How are we today?
Good.
Steve, I think we're all dragging there with you. I think I finally crawled into bed about 1, woke up at 5:45 for work. But here we are living on a dream. So, hey, amazing game. Just a few comments. Overall, I know there's going to be a lot of negative about the defense. I thought we could have been a lot better in our rush lanes. You look at the Derrick Henry gashing us every time. He has just a wide open lane Chris Collinsworth kept talking about Cole Bishop and Taylor Rapp, but you shouldn't have safeties trying to tackle Derrick Henry one-on-one. And then I also was wondering on your guys' thoughts. I felt like Zay Flowers and the Ravens' passing game were so open because we could not stop Derrick Henry. We were selling out trying to stop Derrick Henry. And then that kind of did some things for us in the secondary that didn't help. But overall, yeah. Josh put on the cape. Amazing performance. Love the game. Happy we ended up with a win, and go Bills.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, Alex. Because here's the thing. When you're so determined to stop Derrick Henry, who's absolutely killing you, your second level of your defense is going to cheat up a little bit more, and that leads to more space behind them for the receivers to operate. And to give you an idea on how much space there was out there, the Bills had one pass breakup in the game. One. Do you know who had it? Greg Rousseau with a batted pass. Was not a defensive back with a pass defensed in the entire football game for the Bills. That's not good.
Yeah, it's not good. And you're right. The level of their running game last night trumped everything. The Bills were, you know, desperate to stop it. And they started diving in at the line of scrimmage. And I don't know, I don't remember Baltimore doing a ton of play action. I don't know why. The Bills just had no answers.
No answers.
They had no answers.
I mean, you look at the big plays in this game. The Ravens had 10 plays of 15 yards or more in the game, and it was 5 on the running side and 5 on the passing side. The 5 runs, 49, 46 for a touchdown, 30 for a touchdown, 19 and 17 by Lamar. On the passing side, 39, 36, 29, that was a touchdown, 23, that was a touchdown, and 20. They got big played to death.
I'll say this, too. How good was Lamar last night?
He was excellent.
He was unbelievable. That 19
and he didn't turn the ball over.
He did not. And he, remember when Bosa and Rousseau were chasing him 15 yards in the backfield, and he turned a 15-yard loss into a 19-yard gain. He runs from his 12-yard line, 13-yard line, all the way out.
For first down.
All the way into Bills territory to their 46.
Yep.
It was unbelievable.
I talked to Joey Bosa after the game about that play, and he said, what I did was I should have kept running straight up the field and not take a dive at his ankles. You have to be absolutely sure you're going to get him if you're going to leap like that. And he said, I should have carried my rush further up the field and just pushed him further and further back because Rousseau's on the other side. You have him hemmed in. He said, I should have kept running instead of diving for the sack.
And I know that Lamar and Josh are these, you know, back-to-back MVPs, you know, in the last couple of years. Lamar, he shows you why. I mean, the guy is really a phenomenal
player.
That
offense is machine-like.
And that offense with Derrick Henry in the middle of it and the running game, it feels inevitable that
Bills
you're going to see him again.
Bills also had a major problem, to our last caller's point, to the read option game. I mean, Lamar was out the gate a handful of times for big yardage, and that's got to get fixed in a hurry because you're playing Justin Fields on Sunday, and he runs just as good.
You can bet all the stuff you've seen with the Ravens, the Jets will be all over.
Yeah. Got to take a break here, but more of your phone calls when we come back. We'll lead off with Alex in Rochester when we return here on One Bills Live on a Buffalo Football Monday presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Jope and the Bulldog.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is?
guess what day it is. Huh? Anybody?
Monday, Tuesday, hump day is halfway.
It's Mike Shope.
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
And the Bulldog.
Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on. I know you can hear me.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
On WGR.
Hump day!
Sports Radio 550.
Might be our first actual hump day since, like, May. We're both of us working 5-day weeks. You're off Sunday. That's not even
right.
Applicable.
Yeah.
But it actually is. No Labor Days. And
Right. No vacations.
Imagine if we lived in Canada and had every first Monday of the month off in the summer. Simcoe Day? Really? Canada?
Victoria Day.
Have some self-respect.
Bank holiday.
Yeah, just, we want to give our people some time off in the summer. I respect it, but just stop it. So it's hump day actually this time. It's also steak night.
Well,
how do I look for
some of us?
I'm going to try to get away with this.
You look a little, I don't know.
Under?
I don't know. It's just a lot. There's a lot going on there. The shoes with the shorts. I don't know. I'm just not sure. I don't know. The shoes. Those,
you're not the guy I would ask.
No, that's right.
You're the guy who's here.
I don't. Yeah. I want to use some swear words here. I don't know a lot about this area, but it's a lot going on there.
Okay.
The shoes with the shorts is the thing to me. The rest of it, the vest. With the,
I think I, I'm I, creating something.
I like the shorts
something.
And I like the shirt.
I think I'm inventing something.
A 54,
nope.
53-year-old
better,
man
better.
In Western New York, you're creating a fashion.
A look.
Yeah?
I think so.
Yeah. All right. I wish you luck with that.
I went to Canada last night for my daughter's hockey game.
I don't know if I want to be alongside for much of it.
Every guy I saw from Canada, like that probably lived in Canada, had like the collar up. They all looked like Kevin Bacon in Footloose or something. They all had like sort of the 80s, 90s collar up, you know, sort of faux formal a little bit. Just sort of like, we'll just put the collar up and maybe we're okay. And I asked my wife, like, can I pull that off? She's like, no. But, you know, maybe what's old is new again.
Sorry, you got that popped up there then?
No, not now.
No, okay. The way you just fiddled with it, because it's outside the vest now, and I thought maybe it was up. Okay. Yeah, I don't. That is.
Not in Canada.
Listen, I'm not saying you can't recover from this with me, but you roll up to me on the golf course. I'm there with a friend, and there's another pair coming, and like the starter's goes, hey, why don't you guys? Okay. And you roll up, you got the collar up on the shirt. Like, we are off to a very bad start.
Yeah, I know.
We are just off to a very bad. You might be extremely nice, and I might get over it after a few holes, but I have immediately judged you probably too harshly. But
collar
that's
up.
Just,
it's coming back, though.
I'm aware.
I think usually Canada's first.
It is a little more, it's a little more, Toronto. Yeah, it's a little more international than we're used to.
Of course, you have.
That's why I'm taking a shot at you, being a 53-year-old man from Buffalo, thinks you're starting something.
You got the age right. You have the quintessential Red Sox hat on today as our viewers on YouTube and Twitch. I went to Boston
seeking this hat. I wanted this hat, and we stopped in one place that had these on a rack, but they had snapbacks. They were, you know, one size fits all. And I'm like, no, you know, I can do better than that. It's got to be a store with a better selection. And the second place we went in, the first rack of hats I walked up to had these fitted 7 3/4. The one on top was my hat. I'm like, there it is, 7 3/4. Let's go. Yeah, this is the Red Sox hat I fell in love with them.
70s.
75 World Series, this hat. Didn't like the uniform they wore then with the V-neck top. Not a look I really like, but the hat.
I had that shirt.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know why, but I had that Red Sox
jersey. Were you trying to start a thing with that back then?
I had the Red Sox.
Wow.
I had a few different teams. I never had Cincinnati. I had the Cincinnati starter, the jacket, which I loved. I wish I still had that.
Yeah.
But didn't have the Red Sox white V-neck shirt. It wasn't a jersey even back then. You couldn't buy jerseys. no number or anything like that, but I had that. I had the Mets one, too, with the pinstripes.
Yeah.
Mets.
All right.
Anyway.
I learned a little something. Real quick, because we got, you know, we obviously have a show to do about the football and the Bills. But I learned something about the alternate uniforms these baseball teams are wearing. I got loose on Yankees and Dodgers. I was watching a Yankee-Dodger game like on a Friday night or a Saturday night. It was like the game of the week.
They're in yellow.
And the Dodgers were wearing something dopey. And I was just like, what? Come on. Yankees-Dodgers. Give me Yankees-Dodgers, right? Well, I was at a Marlins-Red Sox game. Okay, not a real, you know, not a story. Rivalry, really. It might have been the first time they ever played. I don't even know.
Yeah.
Right? But the Red Sox were wearing, they wear the red tops sometimes, and I don't even know if that goes with these hats or not. I'm not sure if they wear these hats. Anyway, they've got the City Connect uniforms, which are like the Boston Marathon colors, and I think that's a blue hat or a yellow hat even that matches the colors. And then they have a Fenway uniform now, which is green with green caps. And when I watch them on TV, I go like, come on, what are we doing here? I'll tell you what, in person, they really looked good. They popped in person in a way that on TV, they just kind of look like, bleh. So, I don't know, whatever.
Love to pop in person.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to bring this up. So, Sunday's game was pretty weird for trying to figure out anything about what the Bills want to be. They were down. They had to push it. They did. They were successful. But it wasn't sort of a traditional game where you could, like, all right, well, finally we've got some real evidence of what they want their offense mm-hmm. to be. It doesn't really give you that. And it's possible because they're such big favorites for the next month plus that we still won't know. I just wanted to check back in on Everybody Eats. Because in Sunday's game, everybody did not eat. Like, it was not, you would never use that from Sunday's game. But they were down. They did run 85 plays, which is insane, to Baltimore's 51. I wonder what the win percentage is of teams that run 30 more plays than their opponent. Like, would they usually win or would they usually not win? Like, the Ravens were, it was the Kansas City playoff game here 2 years ago where they were just, like, so efficient on offense, they didn't really need to keep the ball. And then it was, still, the Bills had a great chance to win that game, too. That was the incomplete back-to-back passes in the end zone and then the missed field goal, and that was it. But I just wonder what, if anything, you think Sunday told us about how they might want their offense to be the same or different. You had Coleman on Sunday night get to 11 targets. Targets, I think, is the starting point.
Yeah.
8 for 112 and one. Shakir, 9 targets. Palmer, 9 targets.
Right.
Samuel doesn't play, right? Elijah Moore is 1.
Mm-hmm.
Knox is 1, Kincaid is 4. What does it change anything for you?
You skipped Cook and Kincaid, 5 and 4 each. I'm wondering how many more mouths in the trough do you need to qualify for Everybody Eats? I mean, 11, 9, 9, 5, 4, their top 5 receivers. That's pretty good. I mean, and Coleman didn't get to 11. He was at 1, I think, going into the fourth quarter. So that they just sort of erupted there.
That's what I mean.
I think, so he's at the top, and he ends up looking like an aberration to Everybody Eats. He has a number one receiver stat line, kind of.
In
the game, in the end. But I think the balance of the game is still Everybody Eats, almost except Coleman. He only had one target before the fourth quarter. But the rest of it, like the stats, I think are pretty respectable in the end, in the passing game. And everybody else, except for Palmer, had that big catch, obviously, to pad his yards on the last drive. But everybody else did what they did before, really, that last drive, if not even the fourth quarter, and then Coleman just, you know, elevated.
Well, then,
so I think it was still mostly what they've been preaching, just with Coleman popping at the end.
So if you don't want to completely eliminate the fourth quarter,
No, but before the fourth quarter, Allen is at 143 passing yards, and they're down big.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like last year's playoff game where he throws for one similar, like 122 or whatever that was last year, something low. But you have the fourth quarter where this is a big part of the conversation from the last 2 days is, well, they threw it because they needed to.
Right.
But do they want to? And when they needed to, they were successful. But still, like, it's 143 through three quarters. Like, that's a little bit gross.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like Cook was doing anything. What was their rushing output?
Right. No, he didn't have he didn't have much on the ground. He 13 for 44.
In the end, yeah.
Yeah, right.
That might have been it.
Yeah. I mean, Allen was 14 for 30. As it turned out.
With the kneel downs.
Right. Ray Davis had one touch for 2 yards. One catch, too, because he had two touches. But yeah, I suspect that what we saw for three quarters is more what they want to be than what they were in the fourth quarter. I think I said it right away on Monday. Like, I think they were sort of forced at gunpoint into having to, you know, be a little more aggressive or a lot more aggressive about it. And it worked. And how much that coincided with what Baltimore was doing, you know, how much did they change what they were doing versus what was happening earlier? But yeah, I mean, halftime of the game, they showed the stat on the screen. Allen, 41% of his passes were at or behind the line of scrimmage to that point in the game. And that is very reminiscent of Kansas City in the playoffs. And really, their offense was that a lot last season.
I think, I feel like the bottom line here is, does this game move you at all about their chances? Like, does it change anything for you about their chances? Does it, like, okay, so they didn't really want to push the ball. They did because they had to. Cook was Cook, you know, whatever. It's always this for me. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even care. Does the course of the game change anything for you about how this is going to end?
I don't. It's so early.
I feel like Baltimore is the reason why it might.
Well, sure. They're a particularly odd, difficult matchup. I think for everyone in the league, they're an oddity with how they can play. The quarterback's talent, the running back, how unique he is. When they have their full arsenal of guys, like the big fullback and all of it, like they, I think the Bills try to do this too with the sixth lineman and now Jackson Hawes maybe in that spot a little more often this year as opposed to Anderson. But they're going to try to bully you too. I think the Bills want to play that. I think we got a season's worth, if not more. I mean, I don't want to. You know, the back half of the first, you know, when Brady took over, is hard to, like, hang on them because how much of that was really his thing? You know, they just sort of piecemeal, whatever. But they became more run-heavy, and I think I would guess they still want to be that they still would like to have, like, close to a 50-50 split. I mean, again, they got dragged out of it in this game because they really didn't have any choice. And they ended up with 46 pass attempts and 31 rush attempts. But if this game isn't a 15-point game in the fourth quarter, or as crooked as it is even in the first half, that the run-pass split is closer to 50-50.
Well, the next team they're going to play that they're not more than a 6-point favorite, or less actually than a 6-point favorite against, is in week 6, and that's the Falcons. Like, they should be, they're 6 to 7-point favorites against the Jets. Unless something weird happens, it'll be the same or more against Miami, at least as much against New Orleans in week 4, and then New England in week 5. Maybe New England sort of shows itself to be actually not terrible by then, but week 1, a big letdown, hasn't happened yet. So they'll be able to be the team that I think they want to be for a while here. We'll see what happens on Sunday, because I think they'll go into that game on Sunday trying to establish what they couldn't against the Ravens,
which is like, this is who we were last year. We own this division. We're just going to bully you up front.
Yeah, and the game in New York last year was that.
Without Cook.
Cook missed it, but Davis, the first drive of that game, I just heard Chris and Steve on One Bills Live talking about this game from last year. 10-play drive to start the game, 9 runs.
But they still barely won.
I know, but they attacked that way, and I would guess that they'll try to do the same thing against the Jets.
Me too. I think I'll reserve the right to hate it, because you shouldn't ever barely beat the Jets if you have Josh Allen, right? Like, they barely won. That was in the crux of our sort of angst about what they're trying to do, because like that came out the last 2 days on this show from fans. Like, why do you have to be under pressure to let him out?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good question. It's always been a good question. And that game, the Monday night game, right? Monday?
Yep.
Monday night game last year at the Jets was one where, like, why do we have to play it so close? And also the year before against them where you lost.
I think if I remember it right, they got out. It worked enough for them to get a lead, and then I think they only scored 3 points in the second half. Like, they just escaped.
Yeah, well, that's the Ravens Sunday without the escape.
With a win, yeah. So, I mean, it worked effectively enough for them to build a lead, but then they just didn't – they couldn't do that well enough to continue to extend that lead, pad that lead, whatever. So it was – but I think the Jets' personnel is still very much similar enough that I would expect that they would think, all right, this is how we can beat you. We're going to come out and, Jackson Hawes and Alec Anderson, and let's go.
So is it okay?
I mean,
isn't that the question? Like,
I think, of course, it's okay as long as it wins.
Well,
that's obvious. That's all that matters. So, and it won. This is Brandon Bean calling the morning show after the draft. He was scheduled to be on. He didn't just call in. I don't mean to phrase it that way to make it more pejorative, but. Scoreboard. Like, it's fine. If you're going to score 30 points a game, it's fine. But you don't want to be clawing from behind against every good team you play because you're so conservative going into it.
I know, but they're not going to play any good teams.
Right.
For 2 months.
Yeah, we might not have an answer to this for a while.
What do we do then? Right? I mean,
yell at each other.
That's really, I think, like, if you're at steak night tonight, which I don't know. You're saying I'm not dressed for it.
No, I'm saying the shoes are weird. The rest of it is good. The shoes are odd.
I couldn't find the shoes I wanted.
The shoes are an odd choice.
But it's, of course, Fluvog. If you're at steak night tonight and the Bills come up, isn't this the conversation? Isn't this sort of like the intelligent conversation right now that Bills fans are having? Everybody knows how good Allen is. Everybody knows what they've done. Everybody knows how bad the division is probably going to be. Okay, so what is it? When it matters, are they going to try to boat race good teams, or are they just going to try to beat them 23-20? That's really the question. Mm-hmm. That's the question about Sean McDermott. That's the question about the Bills. They don't have what they want, because in the playoffs, it's different things. It's kind of nuanced, but it's like they can't get the stop, or they play it a little bit too slow. And then time's up, and Kansas City's shooting off fireworks, and we go home. Like, are they going to be – maybe the game won't be in Kansas City this time. Like, that's what right now is about. Whatever you have to do, win all these games, and then, play who you need to play at home in the playoffs, off a bye, maybe off like the Chiefs had last year, which was like 2-3 weeks off, whatever it was. Like, just sort of get yourself into the mm-hmm. best position, but – I don't know what Sunday – like, Sunday was so famously cool for the comeback and the spectacle of it. What a game. What did we learn about who they want to be? Is it anything different? If you're somebody that thought they were just too run-minded, too conservative, if that's not the same thing, I don't want it to be the same thing, then, like, is anything different right now? Like, they played their equal, give or take, and they pretty much got buried until it just sort of flipped at the end and they escaped. I guess I'm saying I don't feel any better the wide receiver point, the Brandon Bean stuff, like Samuel is a scratch. Is he dead? Like, is Samuel just dead? Elijah Moore is one target. It's not everybody eats. It's Coleman and Shakir in desperation and Palmer. Like, they were under duress, and they went to those guys, and it worked. And Cook is just Cook, right? I mean, he's 5 for 58, including a 51. He's 4 for 7 plus a 51. I don't know. Is that meaningful? So Jackson, Hawes, Knox, Kincaid had the early one. That was about it for him. Is it okay?
Big That's all I'm doing. Big is, one at the half, too, Kincaid. That was
right,
a
one
good
of the
job
two.
On that play.
That's right. Is
yeah,
it okay?
If it, you know, I think for now it is. You know, and I don't know. Would I think we'd feel differently if we got one of these games? It feels like we're a long ways. I'm now thinking, and this is not a project I think I'm going to undertake during the next commercial break. I want to go back, like under Brady. Like, is there a game? You remember the game? Funny, they're playing at the Jets here early in Allen's career with Daboll. We're like, what do we have here? And like, how much are they going to trust Allen? And they come out, and it's like 14 passes in a row. This is like
week one.
Yeah, he's just like, bing, bing, zoom, zoom, zoom. Like, this is who we want. You know, get ready, NFL. Here we come. We definitely feel like we are very far from that. But I don't know. Like, I might be. We all might be, because they are a more run centric team, and we're sort of consumed by everybody eats. I'm wondering if there's a game in here in Brady's tenure as old coordinator where that happens. You know, where it's beginning of the game or a close game, and you get just pass. One does not spring to mind. I mean, the most recent one I can think of is that Jet game, and that's 4 or 5 years ago now? It seems like a long time ago.
That's 19 opener.
Wow.
Right. I think. Because 20 opener is COVID and the Bills are at home against the Jets,
right,
and nobody's there. So that's 19. CJ Mosley.
It's a very long time ago. Yeah.
They're down and John Brown, they pull it out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Send your complaints to at WGR550 on Bulldogs here. So we'll call it the X platform. 803-0550. Is the offense good for you? Is anything different? After Sunday, we will talk Jets with Dan Leberfeld at 4. Sal joins us at 5. Trista is back, 6 o'clock tonight. Is that tonight?
Yes, that is tonight.
6 is tonight? 5 is today? 6 is tonight?
Yes.
6 you'd call tonight?
Yes.
Okay. Any comments on my outfit are welcome. I mean, see the whole thing, but... bring it. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog at 803-0550. This is WGR.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's the snap. Allen has time. Now pressure coming from Van Noy. Throws. It's high. And it's caught in the end zone by Keon Coleman. It may have been intended for Dawson Knox, but Coleman's the one that ends up with it.
And you think of all the little things that had to happen to go right for this game. I just had a friend of mine text me, EJ. Shout out, EJ. What's up? Because he's right. He said, Sal, the chain of events that happened in that game were so extraordinary, including the Keon tipped catch in the end zone, the Baltimore missed extra point, the two-point conversion if he doesn't get, the trip up because then you have time to kick the field goal instead of giving Baltimore the ball back, all these things. The chain of events, right? These little things that everything just happened. It was unbelievable. I mean... The Bills had to have all this stuff kind of go right for them at the end of this game, and it did. And for the first time in a long time, the Bills are on the winning end of one of these NFL games of the year, right? That we've talked about and heard about. Minnesota is one of them. The Vikings game here, Justin Jefferson catch, right? The game of the year. Last year, the Rams. I mean, there's other games of the year in the NFL. There's 272 games played every year. But, I mean, 13 seconds, right? All the times the Bills are on the wrong end. Not this time. They're on the right end. 41-40 over the Baltimore Ravens. We're here to talk about it here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you. Thanks a lot for joining me here on a Buffalo Bills Football Monday. Brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. This is the Catholic Health Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Bills Football Monday, presented by Catholic Health, the right way to care. And brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. And by Northtown Hyundai, Western New York's premier Hyundai dealership. Shop online at northtownhyundai.com. We are on YouTube right now. I am live talking with you on YouTube. Thanks a lot to our guy G over there helping out on the stream. Thank you, my man. Thank you all for coming in the chat box. You can keep talking. I'm not able to respond today and during the show. There's a lot going on here, and I'm taking phone calls, so I'm not ignoring you. I know you're in the bullpen. Thank you, bullpen. We love you. I love you. Thank you. I try to recognize you, and so many of you amazing people come in that watch this and come in and say hi. So, yes, I'm here with you. I got my Buffalo Victory, my Victory Monday t-shirt on for you on the camera. You can see it, and we're taking phone calls at 803-0550. So thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Josh Schmidt is producing, by the way, doing a great job as well. I always tell everybody, keep Josh busy on a Monday. Keep him busy. Keep the phone calls rolling in. He's the gatekeeper. You got to get through him first, and then we'll get you on the air. But come on over to the YouTube side of things. It's really cool. And by the way, when you're on YouTube, go to our WGR 550 YouTube page. You can watch us right here. And remember, this is the spot to go to for our morning show and afternoon show every day. And I watch it now. I mean, what we're doing on YouTube now is amazing. And we got Owen and we got G, and they do an amazing job to keeping the content rolling. And you can watch the shows. And what I love about it, when I get up in the morning, I listen to Jeremy and Joe, even the days when I'm going on with them. I'll listen before I go on. And I can pause and rewind and scroll back and forth so easy. It's amazing. And then show up in the Bulldog in the afternoon as well. So make sure you check that out and come on over to the YouTube side of things. It's not the dark side. It's the light side. Could have been the dark side in the dark day yesterday if the Bills would have dropped this one to go 0-1 in the conference against a conference rival that you know is going to be there in the end. But they're not. They're 1-0. We'll talk more about what it means for the future, like upcoming, like several weeks and season in a little while. But let's continue to look back at this game here on WGR with your phone calls. John in San Antonio. Thanks for holding on, John. What's going on?
Hey, Sal. Two things. One, I think what I haven't heard yet is the last play leading in the half, that field goal with 1 second. I mean, that, to me, yeah, in my opinion, was the most important play. I know in the end and we won it, but without those 3 points, you know, we would have had to score. So that field goal at the end was a critical play, and I thought it was well done. And the other thing is Bass. I mean, you know, we have to show a little loyalty here. So, you know, Bass is on injury. I mean, Prater did good, but, you know, Bass is our kicker, and that's just how I see things.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, there's no. I think what's going to happen here is in a few weeks the Bills could have some sort of decision, right? Do they want to continue to roll with Matt Prater, and even if Tyler Bass is healthy, do you take him off IR? You don't have to like release Tyler Bass if Matt Prater is kicking really well. Let him keep kicking, and then maybe when Tyler Bass is healthy, you have to bring him up, bring him back on, because maybe Matt Prater later in the year as a 41-year-old, maybe, you know, his leg isn't the same later. I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. But in the meantime, Matt Prater's your kicker for the next several weeks. I know that. And that was a really, really critical moment. You're right about that, John. A 43-yard field goal that he drills at the end of the half. And they get the 1 second back on the clock because Josh throws an absolute laser to Dalton Kincaid, who gets out with 1 second left. The clock runs out, but the officials put that 1 second back. And it was really, really important that they did that, obviously. John in Las Vegas. What's up, John?
Hey, so how you doing, man?
Good, buddy. Thank you.
What a freaking great win. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that on air, but what a great win.
I think,
man,
you could say freaking. It's okay.
Oh, man, what a great win. So I'm so pumped right now. I got my girls with me last night and my two daughters. As young Bills fans, I said, man, how many times was I on the wrong end of that as a Bills fan in the last 35 years? And man, just what a great, great win. Hey, Sal, I just want to give you a shout-out really quick. Thank you for coming to see my kids during training camp and signing their football. That meant a lot to me. So appreciate you, man.
Yeah, you got it. No, thank you for your loyalty over the years listening to this show. You're one of the OGs on this particular Monday show. You know that, right?
Yeah, I appreciate that.
You got it.
And trust me, it's not going anywhere, Sal. I woke up just to hear this. So, hey, Sal, just want to say one thing. The only thing, you always got to start off with the positive and throw a little negative and then throw a positive back in there. But I just want to see them just do, got to stop the run. That's all.
Yeah,
got to stop the run. Got to be better on the run. But other than that, man, just going back to just being real with you, it's just what a great win. Just what a way to start this thing. I think it's in the air, Sal. I feel it in the air. So hopefully this is the turning point of all of us. And we can see some positive light here and win the Super Bowl. But what a great win, man, Sal. Just appreciate you. I just want to give you a shout out and say thank you again for everything. And go Bills, man. I'm so pumped. Yeah, let's go.
You got it, John. You got it. I always appreciate when you call, buddy. John's been calling a long time on the Monday show out in Vegas and then got a chance to meet him and his family at training camp. It was awesome. Good stuff right there, man. Josh in Hamburg. What's up, Josh?
Hey, Sal, I wanted to get your thoughts on Harbaugh's decision not to go for two on the last touchdown. I haven't heard people talk about that too much because that becomes a three-possession game if they get it. Obviously, it helped that they missed the extra kick for the 1 point. But if it's a three-possession game, I mean, the Bills would have to score a touchdown, I think, if I'm doing the math.
You're talking about them punting instead of going for it? I'm sorry, what player are you referring to?
No, yeah, talking about Harbaugh not going for two on their last touchdown.
Okay, let me go here. This fourth quarter, hold on. This is the Henry touchdown, right? Yep, so Henry scores. It's 34-25. He scores to make it 40-25. You're up 15. He kicks to go up 16. You're saying go for two to make it 17, right?
Yeah, it would have been a three-score.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, that's a good thought. Josh, I'm guessing there are people in Baltimore today saying the same thing as you. Now, it's not my preferred method. I get it. You go because if by kicking it, you're still forcing the other team, the Bills in this case, to not only score two touchdowns but to also get two-point conversions. You know what I mean? And if you don't get that, then you're making it easier on them. But I understand where you're coming from. I'll say that.
Well, yeah. I mean, just like how people had mentioned, man, I was so relieved when they decided to kick it at the end. I was saying the same thing when he decided not to go for two because it was a two-possession game still.
Yeah. No, it's a good thought. It's interesting. I bet you there are people in Baltimore talking about that today, Josh. It's a good thought.
Sure they are.
I think kicking there is the right call for me because I'm still forcing you to not only score two touchdowns but also to convert two-point conversions. And that's about a 50% chance rate. So I think I'm betting on you're going to miss one of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you. But the time of possession thing for me is always the biggest thing, you know. And obviously there's always a chance that you miss the kick, which they did.
And they did. And that was interesting because he was money, that new kid, Tyler Loop for them.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, good thought, Josh. I appreciate that. Let's go to Gio down in Tennessee. What's up, Gio?
Hey, Sal. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Great game. What a way to set the tone for the year, especially going into a relatively easy stretch coming up.
Let's be careful about that, because the Jets looked pretty darn good against the Steelers running the football, at least, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. But one thing I wanted to talk about, and I don't mean to harp on him too much, but Cole Bishop was probably one of the worst players on the defense yesterday, and I just wanted to ask you what your thoughts are and maybe exploring an option like Justin Simmons or Jabril Preppers in free agency to kind of make up for that. If you want to keep riding him out for a few more games, see how he does.
I'm not ready to pull the plug on Cole Bishop, I'll say that, but I do think you have to have a bit of a short leash here if it continues, because I don't know about worse. I have to go back and dig into that, but I will say that there were a couple plays where he could have been better. Also, Taylor Rapp, though. I didn't think either safety was particularly on their game last night, and they have to be better than that. And one of the issues, though, Geode, I will say this. I do want people to keep this in perspective. One of the issues, the Ravens, give them credit yesterday, okay? They did something really smart, and it hurt the Bills. They went with a lot of quick counts with no motion. And by doing that, because of a loud stadium and the Bills having to recognize the formation and communicate to each other, they got the Bills out of rhythm. There were a few times the Bills just simply were not ready for the snap and ready to play. And that's on the Bills by getting ready, but that's on the Ravens doing a really good job. And Cole Bishop's at safety, and because he's timing some things in the communication, that's partly, a reason why suddenly now he's not in the best position to make a play. He gets stiffed arm on the Derrick Henry run as well. I'm not ready to move on from Cole Bishop right now. I think the Bills still believe Cole Bishop could be a very good player. He's just in his second year. I'm also not opposed to bringing in a guy like Jabril Peppers. I don't know how much Justin Simmons wants. I mean, I think that's been kind of the thing with him where, like, what does this guy want? Why is he still a free agent? But, Gio, I think there's a lot there. I would say that you can't have the longest leash ever, but I'm not ready to pull that yet. You know what I mean?
I'm with you. I appreciate it,
Seth. Yeah, you got it, buddy. Thanks a lot for the phone call. All right, CJ in West Seneca. What's up, CJ?
Hey, Sal. Good morning, man. I have more of a tactic slash personnel question. So I was looking at the snap counts that you tweeted out at the end of the game yesterday.
Yep.
And we had a hard time running up the middle. And I know Baltimore's front is really good, but Alec Anderson only had 3 snaps the whole game. And Hawes had, I think, 16 or 17. So is it like a game-to-game thing where they're going to be maybe rolling out Anderson more with being the 6th lineman to run? Or are they kind of phasing him out? Because James Cook had his best year last year rushing, and it was when we were going heavy with 6 linemen, and Anderson was the one doing it. But then last night they gave Hawes a lot more snaps than Anderson did.
Yeah, I think you'll see more of Hawes as it goes forward. And, you know, it's probably also a game-to-game thing. Personnel on the other side will dictate that. What do you have on the edges? What do you have in the interior? I think it's going to be more Hawes than Anderson. Anderson is going to be more of your versatile extra offensive lineman to come in a pinch when you need him. But Hawes, I think, is going to be more the blocker who can also then go out for a pass. And they did throw to him. Obviously, last night was a big play. So I wouldn't worry too much about it right now as far as how much each – it could be game to game. But I think you're going to see, CJ, that it's going to be more Jackson Hawes in that role as the year goes on, like you did last night. I'm interested to see, too, how much Jackson Hawes was in on more of the extra set, like a 6th offensive lineman. He also could have been just in on a regular set a few times on his 16 snaps. I have to go look at that. Bill in Kenmore. What's up, Bill?
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, you got it.
Regarding Jackson there, he said that the reason that they punted at 4th-and-3 late in the game was he had cramped up. And he was concerned that he couldn't maybe run the play.
I know it's funny. Thank you for saying that because I watched a little bit. I couldn't watch the whole game this morning. I watched some of the replay. That was one play I saw and I watched. And on the TV broadcast, after that play, he was bending down, holding himself. And I thought, boy, did he get hurt there? And I didn't see that until this morning. So thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah. So anyway, I just want to mention that.
Yeah, you got it.
I think there's no update either on Worthy with his
dislocated shoulder. He's going to try to play with a brace, apparently. I don't know if that means this week or not, though.
And you can't play football with separate shoulders. It'll pop out again.
Yeah, and
they're in fantasy world. They think a brace is going to help them out.
Yeah, and that's weird, right, Bill? I'm thinking, like, how do you play with a brace when you're a wide receiver, especially one that runs on...
If you raise your hands above your shoulder, it's going to pop out.
Yeah, so we'll see about that. Thanks. And I'm glad you brought all this up, Bill, because that will bring us to the Barnes Firm Injury Report. Brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured? For help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. The only real injury we had on the Bills' side was Brandon Codrington, and he went back in the game. I mean, great for the Bills that Brandon Codrington went back in the game because, you know, you went through this whole preseason. Great for the Bills yesterday. They only had one injury, and that player went back in the game. Because you went through this whole preseason and camp with a lot of injuries. And they're still playing a little bit of catch-up. It is one thing that concerned me going into this game, where the Bills were playing a lot of catch-up with getting guys back and healthy and reps, and they didn't have all that time on task they needed. You get through a game like this with no major injuries, guys that, you know, can continue to work and get those reps. You don't have to have new guys replacing them now. I think it just really helps going into the next week because the Bills are behind on reps, I think. And that was a tough one for them to have this particular game against this particular team when it came to that. Kyle Hamilton left the game late for the Ravens. I'm going to look right now. How much did he play? How much did he miss? Let's see. 83. Oh, he only missed 2 snaps. Okay, he only missed 2 snaps, so he must have came back. He had a hand injury, and he was questionable to return. I don't know if he did. I have to go back and look, but I'm guessing he did because he played 83 of 85 snaps. I mean, how much did we hear about 5 first-round picks for the Ravens? And yes, they do, and they're talented. You know who got beat really badly on that Joshua Palmer catch? Jaire Alexander. I mean, yes, they have. He's a first-round pick. They have him now. And they're very good. 5 first-round picks in the secondary. Everybody talking about it. Malachi Starks, Kyle Hamilton, unbelievable safety group. Corners, Jaire Alexander.
He also got beat on the Coleman catch, too. Just a few minutes later.
Yeah, and I was wondering, like, what at that point in his career, after coming back, he just started practicing. Listen, if I'm in Baltimore this morning, I might be saying, you know, why did you put Jaire Alexander in the field? Did you need to? Like, he hasn't practiced and he's had the knee drain. Like, maybe he's not ready for that. And he got beat. Nate Wiggins, Marlon Humphrey. We know these guys are good. Yeah. And Josh Allen just threw for over 400 yards against them. 394, sorry. Terry's in Texas. Hi, Terry. Go ahead. You're on WGR.
Hey, what's up, Sal? Well, everybody's covered a lot of ground so far, so I don't have a whole lot. But I did want to say, you know, that that win, it kind of came out of nowhere, obviously, you know. But everything happened so smoothly that, you know, by the end of it, you kind of were like, what the heck just happened? Even when Coleman caught that tip pass in the end zone, great heads-up play. But it kind of felt like, well, dang, the Ravens are just going to go back and score again. I don't remember if they did or not, but what a turnaround. And it was really reassuring, to be honest, that that happened against the Ravens. We know they're talented, know they're good, as opposed to somebody like the Jets or the Saints. If we had to come back from somebody like that, I'd be a lot more worried. But I was skeptical coming into the game. I honestly didn't think they'd win it just because of the safety situation we got going on right now. I'd like to see a little bit more effort put in by everybody that's playing back there. But all that being said, good win. Really like to see it. Emotional roller coaster, as a Bills game usually is, but a great win on the opening day. Real quick, man, I just had two things, and one of them you ain't got to answer it on air. But first and foremost, I want to say rest in peace to my uncle, the great Art Wander, Tiny Todd of the Kilowatt. Was sad to see him pass, but you know, he looked.
Is he really your uncle? Was he really your uncle?
Yeah, absolutely.
Man, wow. No, I mean, I didn't know if you said it like that because of, like, as an affectionate type of term, or he's truly, like, your relative.
No, don't let my accent fool you. I'm born and raised in Buffalo, New York.
Oh, it's all good. No, not at all. I mean? No, sometimes, you know, you call somebody your uncle, but I want to say, I don't know if you heard the story. I relayed this the day after he passed away, that, you know, I used to call his show all the time, and I reached out to him when I was a senior in high school and said, hey, I really want to go to Syracuse University to be in radio. Would you write me a letter of recommendation? And he was gracious enough to welcome me to the studio on Franklin Street at the time, and he wrote me a letter of recommendation to Syracuse University.
That's outstanding, man. I didn't hear the story, but it doesn't surprise me at all. He was a great dude. Lastly, and again, this is spur of the moment. You ain't got to answer it right now. Maybe I can reach out to you some other way, form, or fashion. But I'm efforting a golden ticket to a little show. I don't know if you heard of it, the Jim Rome Show. Trying to be a part of the Smack Off 30 and win one for Buffalo. Well, I'd love to have a cameo from you if I can get it in there, man.
I got you, man. Know. I got you. Well, you can find me on Cameo at Sal Sports, and people can do that. I just did one in the break for somebody for a birthday, but good luck to you, Terry. Yeah, I just did a cameo for somebody's birthday. They turned 50 yesterday. I'm like, oh, I got to this late, but that's okay because it was great. Like, this person was a Bills fan going to the game on their 50th birthday. How about that? So I did this cameo. You can find me on Cameo at Sal Sports, and I can do that for you. I did a lot of fantasy football drafts and the orders and talking smack to the people because the commissioner's like, yeah, say this about this person and that about that person. But you can't ask me to do anything inappropriate. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to decline it. Okay? Just so you all know. Thanks a lot. Really appreciate the phone call from Texas. Yeah, rest in peace, Art Wander, no doubt. Mike in North Carolina. Hi, Mike.
Hey, what's up, Sal?
Hey, how are you, man?
Good. Just calling in. Thanks for taking my call here.
Yeah.
I just want to touch on the importance of these type of wins because I feel like these are what really build the character of a team throughout the season. One of the things that popped in my mind, because I know you're a Yankees fan, remember the 09 Yankees? They had a couple of these gutsy come-from-behind wins like Brett Gardner, crazy inside-the-park home runs. You seen in the 90 Bills, the blocked field goal against Denver, Cornelius running it down, the Tasker block punt against, I think it was the Raiders that same year. Like, these gutsy wins, you know, I heard a lot of fans calling. They were a little irritated, upset with the defense. I get it. But Baltimore's, they're top 10. They're a top-tier team. They're going to get their points. But you can't take these wins for granted. These are building character, battle-hardened, catalyst-type wins that I feel like we need to appreciate a lot more.
Yeah, listen, it's a good point. I mean, it's a lot better than sitting here after a loss talking about all those things. When you win, it can be galvanizing in a lot of ways. And I think when you're a young player, you know, you got Deion Walker, you got TJ Sanders, you got Dorian Strong, you got Landon Jackson, you have Jackson Hawes. You have these young players come in here going, you know, watching this happen and being a part of that. That's galvanizing, and seeing when you play until the final snap. And when you have Josh Allen on your team, I mean, anything can happen. Lino in Ontario. Hi, Lino.
Hey, Sal. Good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. I'd just like to say that last night at that game, we've had season tickets to the Bills since 1979. And last night was just an incredible roller coaster ride. But I don't know what happened, but when the Bills were down by 15, I looked at my brother and said, you know what? And I've never done this before. I've always said it's not over until it's over, but we got up and left. And as we started walking to the car, we hear the fans screaming, and I checked our phone, and I go, dude, we're down by two, and we got the ball. And it was, you know what? It's just, I'm so glad for the win, and I'm glad for the city of Buffalo and the fans. And like I've heard everyone say, and yourself as well, you know, it wasn't a perfect game for Buffalo, but at the end of the day, it still is a win. Resiliency, and we did find a way to win. And now it's something that if we can work out the little kinks and build on this game, it looks to be a positive season.
Lino, what did you do? Did you listen to the radio broadcast for the rest of the way? Is that what you
did? Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
We had it on. All of a sudden, it's like, dude.
Yeah.
I looked at my brother. I go, I guess they wouldn't let us back in if we go back.
There's all the stories about the comeback game and people climbing the fences, but I haven't heard anything about that from yesterday for sure. But thank you, Lino. It's a great story. I appreciate you owning it and saying it. And I'll say it again. There was nothing wrong with anybody who left. You know, to me, there's no criticism. Great on you if you stayed and you saw that, and good for you. You were rewarded. But if you left, I'm not about to criticize you. I mean, people get home. I mean, you got a long drive home. It's late at night, work the next day, school the next day for kids. I mean, I'm not out here to criticize people for that. 803-0550 is the telephone number to call. When we come back, we are going to take a look around the NFL. We're going to take more of your phone calls as well. We'll still kind of keep wrapping up on this game, what you saw, and then we got to kind of transition a little bit to next week at some point before we get on out of here at the top of the hour at 12 noon. But man, still a lot to get to on this game. The Bills, a 41-40 improbable, unbelievable victory over the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday Night Football. 803-0550 on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And of course, on this Buffalo Football Monday, it is the Catholic Health Extra Point Show.
Hand off to Cook, lowers the shoulder, and he's in for a 2-yard touchdown run. The Cook is in the kitchen.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland,
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Every style of football, whether it's the way the Bills play or any team, there's going to be advantages to the way that you play. There's going to be disadvantages to the way that you play. Nothing is going to always be great against every team. And this Baltimore team, which is a unicorn in some ways with Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry and what they're able to get done, it just exposes the worst parts of the way the Bills choose to play defense. And, you know, even when you're not even talking about light boxes, right, they kind of corrected that. You still saw the issues. They prioritize matchup style linebackers that thrive playing in space.
Joe Marino of the Lockdown Bills podcast and the Herd Mentality Substack. You want to get those all 22 videos sent to you? Herd Mentality Substack. That's it. The Herd, H-E-R-D, Mentality. Just really great. Joe does great work. All right. That Matthew Stafford getting his first scramble in week 12. I was trying to think of a game we could play. We used to play the second and 17 game. When you call a run play on second and 17, your season ends.
Yeah.
We also used to play the who will be the last team to punt inside their opponent's 40. That was a fun one.
Yeah, that's right.
Now,
did anybody do that? Did Tomlin must have.
I want to go with a last to scramble pool now.
Last to scramble.
It's only down to Rodgers, Goff, and Stafford.
Yeah.
The last to scramble pool. A last to scramble draft could be fun.
Yeah.
You know, 10 to,
you'd get so many guys eliminated in week one, though.
Right. Well, I mean, Josh Allen's the last pick. Josh Allen's going undrafted, you know?
Yeah, what's the point of that?
Right. 803-0550 to join us in 1-888-550-2550. On the Ravens, on turning our attention to the Jets, and you know, Joe Marino there, who we just played, referred to the Jets as dollar store Ravens. You know, Justin Fields is not Lamar, but he's mobile, and Breece Hall is not Derrick Henry, but he can run.
Mm-hmm.
So
We'll see if the Bills have better answers. But Joe, if you missed it, laid it at the feet of not the defensive line, but the linebackers being the biggest issue maybe in the game. Safeties were rough, and linebackers being a big issue in how what Baltimore does, even without Patrick Ricard and Isaiah Likely, they ran all over this Bills team, and in large part because the linebackers just it's a poor matchup. So they don't play Baltimore again until maybe they don't play them at all. Maybe the one
I was going to say they might not.
Maybe the one seed is Kansas City plays Baltimore, so you don't have to, and you do want the Chiefs to win that game.
Yes,
and then they come here.
I thought I was playing golf with Sally yesterday, and we said that at one point, like, what percentage? I don't even think it was a question of like who most people would pick, but what percentage of Bills fans right now would say you only have to play one in a playoff game? Which one would you pick? Would it be 90% would say the Chiefs, even though they're 0-4 against the Chiefs in the playoffs and they're 2-0 against the Ravens?
It's a good question.
Because I would definitely say the Chiefs. Wouldn't even be a hesitation. If they were playing, if we went into a divisional round playoff where the Bills were the one seed and they're playing Jacksonville and the other game, they do their business and they're through. And the next game that's on, Ravens and Chiefs. I would be rooting for the Chiefs. Easily rooting for the Chiefs. Nothing to do with, like, you know, I just would be done with the Mahomes part of it because that'd be cool too if they lost. But for the Bills' sake, wouldn't even be close. Much rather play Kansas City. Aren't the Bills supposed to be beat or supposed to be built defensively to play an offense like the Chiefs? They haven't won, but they're more built that way than all of what that sounds like, how they are totally not built to stop a team like the Ravens.
I don't know. Like, the Chiefs might never get off the ground to what they want to be this year. I told you earlier in the week that so Rice coming back will be big because he's a feature for them. They ISO him all the time.
Yep.
Worthy, what's the story there? We don't know how long that's going
to
be.
He's going to try to play through it at some point. He's not going to do surgery. He's going to wear a brace when he comes back.
If that doesn't work, Tyquan Thornton is the backup plan there, I guess, because he made the team. Kelsey's not what he once has been.
No, the touchdown he had in week one, like he was wide
like
open.
A busted coverage. Yeah, almost shouldn't have happened. So anyway, like we'll see about that. I like a thing that Chris Trapasso did. I want to play this game. They were playing it a little bit on ESPN this morning. Spot the lie. Which game from week one is the biggest lie? Which happens sometimes. They were going to seasons where, hey, remember when this team got blown out week one and then finished 14-2, or this team got a huge win in week one and went 1-15. Basically, the idea was over time, sometimes you get really big, disastrous game one, and then the ship gets righted. The Bills lost to the Steelers with a blocked punt.
Mm-hmm.
And then how were they that year? They're fine. Like, it wasn't a sign of any major problem. They lost to the Jets in New York. How was the season? It's fine. You know, you get past it. So spot the lie in week one. And we can go through some of these games here.
Mm-hmm.
They're not all up for discussion. I guess they all could be.
Yeah, to some degree they could be.
I don't know if anyone's going to get too heavy on like Arizona beating the Saints.
No.
But anyway, here are your options. Colts 33-8 over Miami. Colts, all right, I'll just give you like narratives. Colts dominate. Yeah. Raiders over Patriots. Bengals struggle against Browns but win. Broncos beat the Titans. Packers beat the Lions, who look toothless.
Mm-hmm.
Chargers over Chiefs. Rams over Texans. Vikings over Bears. Steelers over Jets. Do you have one that you look at week one, you think, I wouldn't take any stock in what happened in that individual game?
For both, that's the one.
It can be for one team or both.
For
teams.
One team, I definitely look at that Colts Dolphins game and say that's not going to be the Colts all year. Like, okay, they are not going to be some 11-win team that is dynamic on offense. They looked amazing in week one. That game was all about Miami.
Don't forget who they have on defense in their coaching staff now. Lou Anarumo. Like, if they get a good defense,
yep.
Let me give you their schedule.
They could be that. I just cannot see them being an offense that is nearly as productive as they were in that game.
Let's do a very, 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 very fast pick the Colts. How many games they're going to win? They already have one win. You tell me if they're going to win these games. Broncos.
Loss.
Titans.
Win.
Rams.
Loss.
Raiders.
Loss.
Cardinals. Home.
Win.
Chargers.
Loss.
Titans again, this time at home. Win.
Steelers.
Loss.
Falcons.
Loss.
Chiefs.
Loss.
Texans.
Loss.
Jaguars.
Loss.
Okay, the season's over. There you go. That's yeah. You did it.
There's a lot of those games in the middle where like those are going to be close spreads, I mean,
even,
close games.
Even but, from there, it's Seahawks, yeah. Seahawks, Niners, Jaguars, Texans.
Yeah,
I feel like
I don't see it.
You haven't met 4-3 and then finishing 5-12.
Yeah. The other lie I would say, I saw this on the Lions. The Lions in the first half, they got behind in that game. Like, I think the Packers are great, and I think right now they should be the division favorites, and they look like the challenger to the Eagles in that conference. The Lions, though, they're not. I don't think they're going to be a bad team. I don't think they're going to be fighting for a playoff spot. I think they will be in. They will be good. They will be a double-digit win team. That game, they had long drives that they were putting together that just, like, first half, they went on a 16-play, 78-yard drive. You can tell me if that's actually impressive or not, because there's a lot of small plays in here, that ends at the Green Bay 12-yard line, and they kick a field goal. Then they get the ball back, and they go on another 13-play drive. They go down the field, and Goff throws an interception in the red zone. It's like, that's two drives where you get down to the red zone, yeah. And you come away with three total points. Like, that's their fault, but
yep.
There will be a lot of games where they come away with 14, and that's a close football game.
I remember a game between the Lions. This happened to the Lions in New England. They lost 33-0 to the Patriots a couple of years ago. It's a Ben Johnson game. And they got.
Isn't there a game where they went like 0-6 on fourth downs or
yes,
something?
Yes, 0-6.
Is that it?
They got into New England territory on every possession.
And like didn't score.
And went 0-6 on third. And they lost 33-0 or something like that. It's like, okay, that's an indicator things went sideways. For the Dolphins, so their first possession, interception. And that's interception on their first possession. At the Indy 40. Their second possession, this is when a game goes sideways. Tua, sack, fumble. Third possession, punt. Fourth possession is in the third quarter. So you got three possessions in the first half, and interception, fumble, punt. Interception, downs, and then your touchdown is a garbage time touchdown. So Tua turned the ball over three times. The number of plays the Dolphins ran in this game, it's one of those games where I'm not telling you they're going to be good, but you didn't even run enough plays to know if you're good because you turned it over. Their length of drive for Miami on plays, number of plays. In the first drive, they had 5 plays. Second drive, 2 plays. 8, 6, 7, 9, and then 9 in the end of the game.
Ah.
At halftime, they had, I can do the numbers here, 5 plus 2 plus 8. They had 15 plays in the first half.
Man.
Are they good? Probably not, but I don't know. Everything seems like it's falling apart for them, and week one was a mess.
It just, I can't imagine it turns around, though. Like, that they are.
Well, if it doesn't.
How would it happen? What are they going to be that is, oh, we're a 9-win team that's fighting for the playoffs in the final week of the season? Because their secondary is terrible, and their the middle part of their defense is terrible, and their offensive line is terrible, and their quarterback is fragile and can't take hits, and now their receiving core isn't even good anymore. Like, what's good?
I think what you do is this. If you're a Dolphins fan, you're hoping they figure it out, but they have to figure it out before the season ends. And I've got their schedule here. Ready?
Yeah.
You have to beat the Patriots this week. Have to. That's at home.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're playing the Bills. See you later. Then you play the Jets, the Panthers, the Chargers, and the Browns. You could, if you could stick around 500 and try to figure it out, try to get your game right, the schedule gets tough. Later in the season, the Dolphins have a stretch of Falcons, Ravens, Bills, Commanders. So you have to win this week. You have to get two of your next three, maybe three of your next four. If you're Miami,
you could.
I mean, Miami's schedule. Listen, I'm going to put this out there. If they don't start winning soon, T word, they should tank.
Yes, they should.
They should tank.
Yes, they should.
Because I just gave you their finishing run. I want to give you more of it. Their last, from October 26th on, they play Falcons, Ravens, Bills, Commanders, Saints, Jets, Steelers, Bengals, Bucks, Patriots. You should tank.
Totally. I think there's a couple things that are interesting to me about them, and it's where I would be as a fan if I were them. I would be ready now.
You'd be ready now.
I'd be ready now. Go to the bottom. I'm done. Whatever gets. You know what I would want? I saw this stat yesterday that Chris Greer, this is his 10th season as the Dolphins general manager. He has now set the record for most years as a GM in the NFL without ever winning a playoff game. 10 years in, I mean, I think I saw that he's been in the organization since 2000, which is when they last won a playoff game. So I'm ready for the GM to go. I'm ready for the coach to go. I want it to be so bad that they have no choice. You got to blow the whole thing up. I'm done with Tua if I'm them. I'm done with all of it. I want to start over, and I want to be picking first if I'm the Dolphins. Even that, like, oh, they play the Jets, and maybe they could beat the Patriots this week. Like, let me scrape my way to 9 wins, and maybe I backdoor it into week the 7 seed so I get my doors blown off by Baltimore in round 1. I wouldn't want that if I'm Miami. Just prolonging the inevitable at that point. So I'd already be wanting to write the obituary on them. Which, listen, I thought this a little bit when they got there. I thought Mike McDaniel, it was going to work, but the one mistake he made, you tied your car to Tua. And now the team isn't perfect around him, and you're seeing a quarterback that is good when everything is good around him, and when there are problems, he can't lift everything up.
It's not even just that. I mean, his record with Tua starting and finishing games is very good. It's Tua's not durable enough. It's right.
He's had to build an offense.
For sure. Near
that
perfect
when
offense.
When anybody else comes in and runs it, like nobody else can do it because it's so tailored to this very specific, unique quarterback that he has.
Yep.
That can only do certain things.
803-0550 is our number in 1-888-550-2550. Maybe you saw it, maybe you didn't. Mike Vaccaro of the New York Post. There's a piece up at the New York Post. Headline: Josh Allen is the NFL's new unicorn.
A lot of unicorns.
What a time to be alive.
The new unicorn.
The new unicorn.
Unicorn means there's not anything else like him, and there never ever has been. And I think you could say that about him.
It's pretty close.
The Elway comparisons are like, it's the best you can do, but it's not the same.
I'll say this. I think there might be a little bit of a... The rivalry clouds what people say. And for Bills fans to get mad at Ravens fans for trashing Allen, a lot of you were just as guilty trashing Lamar. Lamar is unbelievable.
Yep.
He is simply the other unicorn.
There's two unicorns that they are...
Josh can be a narwhal.
Josh is a dragon in sure. Lamar's
Josh
unicorn.
Can be a narwhal, whatever you want. I don't know. He can be a...
Narwhal.
Yeah, narwhal. Don't know what a narwhal is?
No, I know what a narwhal is, but do you want to be a narwhal?
Why do you want to be a unicorn? Is a unicorn have powers, or is it just rare?
Yeah, they have powers, don't they?
What are the powers?
Can't they, like, shoot lasers out of the
unicorn
of the
shoot lasers out of their horns?
Yeah, can't they?
The people that first wrote about unicorns...
They fly, right?
Hold on. I want to go back. If they fly, then they have wings.
But I think they fly anyway. It's the magic.
They just
gallop
on air.
That's a Pegasus that has wings.
Yeah, Pegasus has wings. A unicorn.
That's right.
Lasers. The people that first crafted unicorns, lasers did not exist.
That's right. All right, so how about Lamar can be the unicorn and Josh is a Pegasus? He does fly through the air more often than Jackson. Jackson doesn't jump over people.
Pegasus is an actual character, though. It's not a Pegasus. He would be Pegasus.
Sure. Does unicorn start that way, too, though? Pegasus is a character in what? The Idiot or whatever?
The Idiot?
Not the Idiot.
Oof, this is getting better and better.
Yeah. It's football season. I got third string running backs on the mind right now. Sure. I can't be reaching into deeper parts of my brain.
But Lamar is just... I said it on Monday or Tuesday. Any idea that... We had this early in Lamar's career, right? The game here where he didn't have that big of a game. The comeback win in Baltimore, they're down 20-3 and they win. The Taron Johnson pick six game. That Lamar, you could make a case that, you know what? The Bills have an answer for this guy. Like, they don't get beat by him. I don't think you have it anymore. The team that they've built over there right now, you don't have an answer. For what he does and Henry and everything that they have, you don't have an answer.
Mm-hmm.
Which means...
Who does?
No, I agree. That's the million-dollar question, though. All this talk about how the Bills in this game played a low-event game, wait for them to make a mistake, blah, blah, blah. I don't want you to approach it like that in the playoffs.
Right.
I want you to approach it like they approached that Miami game after Miami scored 70, which is, okay, 70's cute. Watch this. And they just foot to the gas pedal the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they will, but I don't want to be passive in the playoffs. And they've done it multiple years. They did it against Kansas City 2 years ago.
To get to that point, though, I think they have to have an acceptance that you're not going to stop this team.
I have an acceptance that you're not going to stop
And
that
I
team.
Wonder if they do. Maybe they thought from the playoff game, like, we found a blueprint that keeps them a little bit. They scored less than 30 points in that game, right? Against Baltimore, that's a win. However you get to that place, you keep them under 30, that's a huge win. And how many times do you need to see them look like they did on Sunday to realize, like, that's not going to happen very often?
You held them to below 30 because you held them to 25 because of a drop two-point conversion. So that's 27, and it's tied in the fourth.
Uh-huh. But that's a win. That's a win against that offense.
I know. 25 is a win.
That is as good as you're going to do, however you get it. Yeah, I don't know. Like, again, part of it is, like, I don't know what else they're supposed to do differently defensively, which means the onus goes to the offense.
Yes.
Unless you believe, like, Michael Hoyt is going to make that much of a difference that they're going to stop Henry, and that's going to make a 10-point difference between the week one game and if you see them again. And I just don't. I think he's a good player. I think Ogunjobi could be a good player for them, but I don't see them being so much better on defense in 5 months that I'll be thinking, oh, no, they can handle him on defense and play that low event style. Like, no, I think they're going to have to score points against that team.
Meanwhile, the AFC West, 2 years ago we thought it was the case. Now it is. Find the bad team. It's the Raiders.
It's probably the Raiders, and
they
look decent.
They are not bad.
They look decent.
They are not bad. The Chargers and the Broncos and the Chiefs, that will be a three-team race.
The Broncos didn't look good, but they played a really bad team that kept dropping the football.
Yeah.
But I still like them for the year. Their defense is awesome. They turned the ball over a lot. That could have been a little bit of it, too. Yeah, that's 1-4. Is that the best division in football right now?
Yes.
Like, without having a weak spot?
Yes.
Because every other division seems to have, like, at least one bad team. Maybe the NFC West, you would say, doesn't have a bad team either.
Let's get a call in here. John in Cheektowaga. John, quickly before the break. Go ahead.
Yeah, what you just said, I was going to mention when I called. That Miami game was right after they scored 70 points. They've been the same team ever since then. McDaniels had 2.5 seasons, almost 3 seasons, to adjust. And I think it's because of Tua. Tua just cannot, once he gets sacked or fumbles or throws a pick, he kind of loses his composure. And I'm sure he's had talks with him where he said, listen, you got, unlike Josh, he's just not a physical presence where, you know, his size really hurts him, I think. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's been, I think, the question about them is the league has figured you out on offense. And what's your pivot? And I don't know how many pivot options you have when you have a limited quarterback. So that might be a lot of it. I think their pivot has been, we're just going to throw the ball really short. That's it. We're going to throw the ball really short, and we're going to run the ball a lot. They ran the ball. For all the talk about how much the Bills went from a pass-heavy team to a run-heavy team, the Dolphins did that, like, multiplied. So that is it. I think the coach is kind of stuck at, I got to pivot. The league knows they've gone one full year without Tyreek Hill catching a 30-yard pass. But I don't know what option you have when you can't roll the guy out of the pocket. You can't throw the ball to certain parts of the field. That's what Xavien Howard, the Colts corner, said on Sunday. He's like, we literally just left the sidelines open. Like, go ahead, throw to the sidelines. We're going to take the middle short game away from you and see what you do. And the Dolphins didn't have an option. They didn't have anywhere to go with the ball. So I don't know. I think they're stuck. I think it's going to get worse and worse. But maybe the coach gets fired after the Bills game.
803-0550. Thanks, John, for the phone call. 1-888-550-2550 to join us. What do we got when we get back? Let me find some stuff I haven't yet been able to get to that's on my list of things to do. Rivalry uniforms?
Rivalry uniforms.
Are they available today?
Today.
Listen, if they're not selling a Deion Dawkins rivalry uniform immediately, we riot. Immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Dawkins should have been the first one to get one. I think I've seen like 4 or 5 options will be available, and I do not see Dawkins.
I have not seen it either.
All right, well. Here we go.
I hope they have them. I'm not confident right now.
They better have it. All right, Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.